Well, today is July 16th, 2019, and I am interviewing Richard Wood, who served in Iran from 1964 to 1966 as a
community development
volunteer.
Volunteer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. So tell me why you joined the Peace Corps.
That's really a very good question. And I, you know, thinking back, I think I had gone to college. I did a BA at Yale, and at first I thought I wanted to be an engineer because my dad was an engineer. He came out to Seattle, one of the first engineers at Boeing, and I got partway through the program. I thought, this is really not for me. So I thought, well, I did take a couple of philosophy courses in high school and kind of carry that on as a bachelor's degree. So in philosophy and political science, and I found myself graduated. I'd been accepted at law school in Los Angeles, and I said, I really don't want to do that, and I'm not quite sure where I'm going. And so the idea of the Peace Corps just came up, and I thought, well, you know, that sounds really exciting. And, you know, I'd never been outside the country before, and I thought, well, let's give it a try.
Yeah, and what did your parents think, and what do your friends think?
Well, my parents, I think, were kind of hoping that I would come back to Seattle. And I was dating a woman at the time, and she was very encouraging about going. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I had other high school friends that had indicated an interest in doing some overseas work. So I thought, well, that was pretty good support.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. So what was the application process like? What did you go through in order to get into the Peace Corps?
Well, I remember filling out the application, and I don't remember if there was an oral interview or not. Now, this was 1964, so it would have been in the spring. I did, on the application, I remember that I was given a choice of where I wanted to go. And I thought, well, maybe Latin America might be nice. I've done some mountain climbing. Nepal would be good, too. So I kind of thought in my mind, the Peace Corps must have taken a look at a map and drawn a line between Latin America and Nepal and saw that it crossed right by the Iran.
Did you have any, like, what? Did you have medical exams? Did you...
I'm pretty sure we did, but I don't remember if that occurred before or after. I think that happened maybe during the orientation process.
Okay.
It was at Utah State University.
Uh-huh.
In Logan, Utah, and I do remember there were some psychological discussions we had and some medical exams.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure that took place at the first part of the orientation program.
Okay. So what was orientation like?
Orientation was. It was really interesting. The Iran 5 was consisted of a lot of bachelor degree folks. There were some agricultural development and some manual arts volunteers, and we were all kind of put together and had a series of language and cultural classes. We played soccer. We were housed in a fraternity that was open during the summer. I think also that we also suppose that perhaps the Peace Corps thought that this location was probably the closest we could get in the United States to simulate what would happen in Iran.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Similar kind of geography.
It was kind of desert-like.
Yeah. So how long was orientation?
It was for the summer, so it would have been 2 months.
And what was your class like? Was it mostly men? Was it a mixture of men and women?
There were no women in the program, although when we got to Iran, we found that there were women who were in Iran 4, which was an English teaching
yeah. job. Yeah, but yours in community development was all men.
Right.
Okay. So then what happened after you had your orientation?
Well, we were selected. I went home briefly back to Seattle, and we met in New York, got on an airplane, and flew for seemed like a long time to Tehran.
Mm-hmm. I've always been curious about those days where they took a lot of people and then deselected during that orientation period. Were you guys aware that you were always being scrutinized? Was that nerve-wracking? I mean, what did it
I think we
feel
did
like?
know that. I don't know that it was particularly nerve-wracking or not. I know that several volunteers deselected themselves, but I don't remember how many of us finally went to Iran. I think the group must have been around 50.
It's a big group.
It was a fairly good-sized group, yeah.
Yeah, and once you arrived in Tehran, what happened?
Well, we were put in a hotel, and we got in the middle of the night, and I remember waking up in the morning and kind of going outside and looking around and not really knowing what to expect. And there were trees growing along the street, and I looked up, and the sky was blue, and there was clouds just like in the Pacific Northwest. And I said, things aren't so different after all. So after a short stay in Tehran, we went to another orientation session at an agricultural college. It was a little bit west of Tehran, and we were probably there for maybe a week or so before we were given our assignments.
Oh, just a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the language you were learning, I assume, was Farsi.
The language is Farsi.
And how difficult was that for you?
Well, the script is different. It was fairly difficult, but I remember finally, and language is pretty intense. I think we probably were studying for a couple hours a day. I remember being very surprised that when I got to Iran and I tried it out, people actually understood what I was saying.
And in the agricultural, you guys were all staying together in a dorm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what kind of community development training did you have?
Well, back in Utah, the well, it was. I guess you'd say there were two parts. One was the idea was we would be sent to a village, and we were expected to figure out how the village operated. Who the important people were, and what they did, and if we wanted to affect a change, how we might go about doing that, and. So we had we kind of paired up into groups of, I think it was maybe four people, and did interviews around Logan, Utah. And so we were trying to figure out just what the power structure was like in Logan. And the other part was physical. We did several hikes in the mountains and stayed out overnight without any shelters, just on the assumption that that would be something we would face when we got to Iran. And in my case, neither of those things were applicable.
So you get your assignment. What was your assignment?
My assignment was to work with a community development office, an engineering and office in a provincial capital. And the city was Sari in the Sari in the province of Mazandaran. So this is on the northern part of Iran. Tehran is north of Tehran. There's a range of mountains called the don't remember the name of the range of mountains. But after you cross over, you head down towards the plain along the south coast of the Caspian Sea, and this is quite a big difference in climate. It's more temperate. It reminded me a lot of here in the Pacific Northwest. We've got mountains to one side, we got water to the other side. Very lush agricultural region.
Nice.
And the office where I was working had an engineer, and I was paired up with another volunteer, Napoleon, and we knew he was kind of short, and we made a lot of humor out of the fact that he would come in and say, "I am Napoleon," and people would be very impressed.
Okay. And what did you guys do when you got there?
We were housed in an apartment, and there were two other American Peace Corps volunteers that had preceded us there, an English teacher and an agricultural specialist. And the, you know, like a typical day would be to get up from the apartment and maybe have breakfast of some tea and some bread and cheese, and then we would have a 5 or 10 minute walk to the office. And there, there was a director of the Edirne Omran, which was the Iranian Development Provincial Office, and there was an engineer there, and a number of different officers that would go out into the, and coordinate projects. So we would do some office work. We would travel with these. What was the name of the position? Out to villages and talk to people about what they had, what they'd hoped that we might accomplish. A project might include making a road, might include surveying for a water system or a schoolhouse. And so we were walking around, we were meeting people, we were talking to people, and then we'd take that information, come back, and develop plans that may or may not get funded.
And did you speak Farsi in the office? And when you went out to these villages, did you have help translating? Did you get facile enough in Farsi that you could go to a village and just talk with people about what they wanted?
We had kind of a mix. The main engineer that we worked with spoke fairly good English. And a lot of the community development counterparts spoke some English. So it was kind of a mix of Farsi and English. Mm-hmm.
And what did you in particular do? Did you draw up plans? Did you just consult with the engineer and work with him to draw up plans? I mean, how much did you use your engineering background that you'd had some of?
Well, we would do actual surveying. Mm-hmm. And we might be sent out and would do that actual work.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, and we would do drawings when we got back to the office.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, you know, the actual definition of the project, that was not within our purview.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that had already been decided.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were making a good contribution to the projects, to the efforts of developing these communities?
Well, it's difficult to say because a project might take, you know, a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't always see the fruits of our labor.
Mm-hmm.
With some of the roads, though, I remember one road that we worked on that went from the village to the Caspian Sea coast. Yeah, we were part of the survey team, and then actually when you saw the construction. So, but in the most cases, though, that, you know, what was happening in terms of finishing the project happened later.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious how many of these projects actually got done.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about what a usual day is. What were your biggest challenges during the day? What was it like moving to a totally different culture and getting plopped down and living there?
Well, I think it helped us that we had another two other volunteers in town that could kind of show us where things were and kind of laid out, you know, how you operated.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like we adapted fairly quickly. You know, we would take trips to visit other volunteers that were scattered in different towns along the Caspian coast. That was kind of a weekend event that we would do. I'm looking back a long time, 50 years.
Yeah. 50
years
is
a long time.
Do you remember any big surprises that you had about the culture or about yourself during this time?
I think one of the biggest surprises was that the Iranian people were really welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And we were a big deal in town, and kids would come up and say, "Hello, mister, let me practice my English with you." Going out to the villages, the villagers that we met were extremely generous, and, you know, they didn't have much, but when our team would come into the village and they would lay out a lunch for us. And the kind of my expectation was, well, you know, these people are just living way up in the hills and they can't have very just a tenuous connection with the outside world. And that was simply not the case. They had radios and they could ask us questions about, well, what, you know, explain American foreign policy, because we have a hard time. And so that was a big surprise, a pleasant surprise.
Any unpleasant surprises?
There probably were. You know, we all had health problems, especially when we were having that initial orientation at the agricultural college. And we got over that. You don't remember the unpleasant
parts, though. What was your medical care like while you were there? Like, would you go into Tehran to see a doctor, or?
We had a medical kit with us, you know, for minor stuff, but in the event of any serious medical issues, we'd have to go to Tehran. And I don't remember any of us having anything serious.
So the usual stomach stuff when you first got there and got through that.
And you got through that and you're used to that,
Yeah. Did you travel while you were in the Peace Corps?
Traveled both in country and outside the country. We got down to the south to Esfahan and Shiraz. We went east to Herat and went over to Afghanistan. During the break between year one and year two, we traveled to Jordan and Egypt. And we, as a a group of guys, that were it ranged from four or five.
Did you feel like you made friends with Iranians?
I think so.
Can you talk about some of the people you made friends with?
Well, the colleagues in the office, we made friends with a lot of the kids that were around and wanted to learn English. We made friends with shopkeepers. We were known in restaurants.
Yeah. So you felt like you were part of the community.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which is nice. And how big was the town you were in?
I think the town must have been less than 20,000 people. It wasn't big. And at that point, Iran was only a country of 20 million people. Tehran had a population of about 2 million.
Religiously, what was it like for you? Like now there's the sort of struggle between Sunnis and Shias and certainly the Muslim versus Christian stuff that happens now, at least here and probably there too. Was there any of that when you were there?
Well, most of Iran was and still is Shia, and there are smaller sects. And we found out, people would tell us later that there was discrimination, but for the most part, you didn't see that. You know, religion, of course, was a part of the daily life, and people prayed, and there were customs regarding women, and they had to be covered, and but I never got the feeling that by being a Christian, of a Christian background, that I was in any way discriminated against. We would have some religious discussion with Iranians, but that was more not an effort to convert, but just to explain and discuss.
Just to talk. Did you ever go to mosque?
Visited mosques. I don't remember ever going through a service, a religious service. But then I wasn't going to religious services back.
Back at home either, so it wasn't any different. Yeah. How did you eat there?
In other words, sparsely or?
Yeah. Did you cook your meals? We had
some meals cooked. We had a housekeeper to cook some of our meals. We would go out to restaurants. Iranians have a really nice cuisine. It's very it's not particularly spicy, but I remember never having had yogurt before. I think this is really pretty good. Rice and bread, like there will be chili kebabs, or which is beef that's been grilled, various stews, choreshes that mixed with rice.
So it sounds like you didn't do a lot of your own cooking.
That's correct.
Yeah, you didn't have to go out to market and pick up stuff and trying to figure out what the ingredients were and all those things. So that's pretty luxurious living.
It was very luxurious, that respect, yes.
Yeah. How was your apartment?
Well, we had an apartment to begin with. Let me try to think. There was a kitchen area. A couple of bedrooms, a living room, not totally different from what we would see in an apartment here. The bathroom in Mostara was different. We had to learn to use that. For the most part, the water was potable. We didn't have to worry about drinking water out of it. We didn't boil water.
Yeah. Now, did Peace Corps find the apartment? Did the engineering firm find the apartment? Do you know how you ended up there?
The Peace Corps found the apartment.
So, for you, the Peace Corps found the apartment. Great.
Yes.
And I assume they paid for everything, and you had a monthly stipend?
We had a monthly stipend, and I don't remember if we paid rent or not. I think probably the Peace Corps paid for the apartment, and we would have personal expenses that the stipend would cover, food and transportation and clothing.
And did you date at all when you were over there?
We socialized with some of the women volunteers. It would be really, it was unheard of to socialize with Iranian women. That was just not done. And the only exception I remember with our group was that one of the agricultural volunteers was in a village and ended up marrying an Armenian woman. But I don't think that there were any, I don't remember any examples of Americans dating and socializing with Iranian men or women.
Were you allowed to, like, talk to Iranian women?
That was not, a problem.
Okay.
Just going beyond the social
just that.
Situation.
Yeah. What was your biggest challenge in going through all of this?
Well, you always have to. It was difficult to relax. We were in a different environment, and 2 years when you're just starting is an awfully long time. And you know, we would miss certain things, that certain freedoms that we would have back in the United States we didn't have in Iran.
Like what? Like dating the women.
Yeah, well, yes.
Did speak of one. Yeah.
We didn't. There was cinemas. We didn't always understand what was being broadcast in Farsi, but we'd go out to movies and. Again, traveling around the country was a nice form of sort of doing something.
Yeah. So sounds like what you're saying is it wasn't as sort of stimulating. You were used to having more entertainment options, being able to let your hair down and not have to worry that there was a whole community watching you.
Yes.
Yeah, things
again,
like that.
We were always on display in a certain sense. We were the first Americans that a lot of these people had ever seen.
Well, and that reminds me of goal number 2 of Peace Corps, which is to let the world know what Americans are really like, as opposed to what they see in the movies and TV. Did you have any experiences around that? Did people have different expectations from maybe having seen an American movie?
Probably the biggest expectation on the Iranians' part was that we would dress very formally. And all the officers and the engineers in the office would always be out in a suit and tie.
Mm-hmm.
And we dressed pretty much like you see me now, and mm-hmm. with casual, you know, Levi's and casual shirts and
mm-hmm.
maybe boots. And so I think that was probably strange for a lot of the Iranians to see us
mm-hmm.
in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you travel? You said you traveled around the country. What was the transportation system like?
There are city-to-city taxis called Karaes, and to go to Tehran, there'd be a place in one of the circles where you could get a Karaes, and it would load up with as many people as it could take, and then it would go over the mountains and drop us off at another circle in Tehran. There was a train that went along the north coast, and we took that to Gorgon in one of our trips. We had a volunteer there, Barclay Moore, that stayed on for 6 years. I think he sent a record for the amount of time that at least an American Peace Corps volunteer in Iran would stay. And he got libraries established and schools established, and you know, if we were to look at a paragon of the Peace Corps volunteer, it must have been Barclay.
Yeah, yeah, nice. Did your family ever come over and visit?
They did not.
Did other people's family? I mean, did you kind of miss not having your family come over to visit?
Yes, yes. I think there were a few volunteers that got visits from their parents, as I remember.
Mm-hmm. They still wanted you back in Seattle.
I think so, yeah.
How long did it take to write a letter and get a response back? What was the communication like with you and your family?
Well, I don't remember ever talking on the phone. Of course, we didn't have Skype. A letter would take, it must take 10 days to 2 weeks each way. So it might be a month between it would take for letters to go back mm-hmm. and forth. Packages may or may not ever happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that happened at home while you were there that kind of upset you that you weren't there, or did things go pretty smoothly at home and this was 2 years of college?
Well, I was probably at that point pretty oblivious of what was going on in terms of my sister's lives. I have mm-hmm. two younger sisters, and so that wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I don't think that there was anything there that made me feel like I should be back in Seattle.
Okay, so you're there for 2 years,
yeah.
and you do your job, and it's time to go home now. What were your feelings when it got to be time to come back?
Well, maybe the excitement to move on and do something else, also a certain reluctance to go, because in assessing the whole 2 years, it was really a positive experience.
In what way?
Again, being able to see, to get inside another culture that you just can't do as a tourist. And again, this is me looking back at the experience. To be able to live there and more or less be accepted as just part of the society. And I think I probably felt that somewhat at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you miss call to prayer? Well, I always liked that rhythm of the day, you know?
Right, yeah.
It was always, mm-hmm. you always kind of had your ear out listening for that nice rhythm that mm-hmm. came out. It was always so pretty. And what was it like coming home?
Well, there were five of us that flew to Beirut and bought motorcycles.
Uh-huh.
And we traveled through Lebanon, and we went over into Syria and up the eastern coast of the Mediterranean through Turkey, crossed over into Greece. I met my youngest sister in Athens, and we on the motorcycle traveled through Europe and ended up bringing the motorcycle back.
So it sounds like Peace Corps really fed your adventurous spirit.
Oh, absolutely.
And the young man who'd never left the States decided to see a lot of the world.
Saw quite a bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 And then you flew home.
Yes.
What was it like coming back to the States?
Well, I had been offered a Peace Corps assignment in Micronesia to extend for a couple of years. And in 1966, they were not offering draft deferments. And I didn't particularly want to go to Vietnam. And so I got into a graduate program at the University of Washington with a specialty in Middle Eastern science.
Mm-hmm.
And managed to return to Lebanon for a year to do kind of postgraduate work, and then another year, a fellowship to study Arabic at the American University in Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, I think, was affected by the region.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it was so different and so rooted in history, where we think that 300 years of is old, or we're going back all over that region thousands of years.
Yeah.
To be able to actually be, you know, to go to, you know, as we're maybe doing a road, and to see potsherds that date back to heaven only knows when.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So did you stay in Middle Eastern work?
Well, pretty much so for a while. After coming back from Egypt, at that point, two young boys came along, and at some point I felt like I had to get a job,
mm-hmm.
and Boeing was looking to develop business in the Middle East, so
mm-hmm.
I got on as a, joined Boeing as doing marketing and business development work.
Yeah, and they were probably delighted with all your Middle East.
I hope so.
Yeah, and somewhere along that route, if two boys came along, there must have been a wife.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. Yes, when I was in still in graduate school, I got married,
mm-hmm.
and when I went to my wife and I went to Lebanon and came back with the first son, and
mm-hmm.
then we went to Egypt and came back with and had two more boys. So we have a family of three boys.
Nice. Well, how do you feel like Peace Corps impacted your life? What do you think, in all kinds of ways, you got out of Peace Corps?
Well, it certainly expanded my view physically of what the world looks like. And it, it caused me to appreciate that, you know, that there are different cultures that are important. They're important to the whole mix, of the global mix. And you know, we got countless, whenever we traveled in the Middle East, be it Iran or Lebanon or Egypt, or that the people would say, you know, we like you as Americans. We don't like your foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's... that's reassuring in a way, but it's also a challenge, I think, to come back as a volunteer and to, you know, reassess what we mean as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Are we behaving as global citizens?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And or do we fall short in that respect?
Yeah. So that's something that's now just been part of your life.
Yes.
Is that evaluation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever been back to Iran? Did you ever get a chance to go back?
One quick trip back in conjunction with some Boeing work I was doing in Saudi Arabia. So
mm-hmm.
stayed, you know, briefly over the weekend in Tehran.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not been back to Saudi. It would be something I'd like to do, but I think it would be difficult.
This time.
I know that that Rick Steves has been, you know, the travel guy in Edmonds, mm-hmm. has been sponsoring trips to Iran, which is...
Hmm. Now?
Now, yeah.
Oh, that surprises mm-hmm. me. That surprises me, but you never can put anything over on Rick Steves. He can manage all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back. What did you feel like when all the revolution was happening and the hostages were happening? And, I mean, you must have had a feeling of personal connection with all the changes that were convulsing the country.
For me, it came as a complete surprise, and I didn't sense the roots of the revolution when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was several years later, but still.
It was like only like 8 or, it wasn't all that many years later.
Yeah, well, the revolution was in the mid 70s, and I was there in the mid 60s. So yeah. And looking back on it, though, the Shah of Iran, there was a constitutional monarchy in place when we were there. He was supported first by the British and then by the Americans. And a lot of that had to do with containing Russia and assuring an oil supply.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm not surprised that a lot of Iranians felt that, their independence was being encroached on.
Mm-hmm.
And, but still, though, it was terrible to think that to be such an integral part of a country and then mm-hmm. find that the revolution had occurred. Probably a lot of our friends and people that we met did not survive the revolution. And we've got Iranian friends today, that go back and forth and, talk about, the difficulties there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that currently we're treating Iran with very much respect or appreciation.
No kidding.
I don't know how I can say that gently.
Well, you can't. It's impossible these days to say things gently about that. The third goal of Peace Corps is educating Americans about other countries. Have you felt like you've had a chance to do that? Are people interested in your experience? Were they interested when you came back?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think for most of Americans, Iran was just a mystery, and probably still is to a large extent. In graduate school, there was friends with an American Peace Corps volunteer from Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
and I know we were taking a class in Middle Eastern Studies, and our professor had a radio program, and he and this other guy and I were on together and talking about Iran and trying to explain what was going on. So yeah,
cool, yeah. Very nice. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share?
I think you've gone over I think you've gone over the whole lot. Thank you.
Well, it was a delight, and thank you for coming down and sharing with me.
Thank you, Candy.